Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I bring you a message today from the people of Ireland.
The Irish desire peace with England and with the rest of the world.
It is a question of a republic.
And we want the creation of a new Ireland.
I wish to talk to you this evening about the state of the nation's affairs.
Welcome to the History of Ireland. Hello. First off, I need to start with an apology. This episode has been a touch delayed, down to a whole number of factors. Melbourne's sixth lockdown has been making pretty much doing anything difficult, and I've been pretty busy with another project I will bug you about at the end of the show. But just know, I sincerely apologise for the delay, and I'm excited to get this show out. So let's get into it. Last time we mentioned Éamon de Valera, he was leaving David Lloyd George's office. Both men were a bit at an impasse. What followed was a fascinating back and forth of letters throughout August and September that helped lay the foundations for the treaty talks that were soon to come. The first letter, sent from Lloyd George to Dev, formally laid out what the two men had discussed in person. A quick recap of what Dominion status was, with provisions around military, trade, seaports, etc., etc. De Valera's reply pretty much had just restated what he had said in person. He wrote, "Dominion status for Ireland, everyone who understands the condition knows, to be illusory. The freedom which British dominions enjoy is not so much the result of the legal enactments or of treaties as of the immense distances which separate them from Britain and have made interference by her impracticable. The most explicit guarantees, including the Dominion's acknowledged right to secede, would be necessary to secure for Ireland an equal degree of freedom. There is no suggestion, however, in the proposals made of any such guarantees." So nothing new here, right? Dev believed Dominion status wouldn't work for Ireland because we were too close to Britain. Except he subtly adds one little hint around the right to secede. Maybe the Irish would be happy with Dominion status if they could secede at a future date. This was a little bit of political wiggle room that Lloyd George picked up on and quickly shut down, writing in his next letter, "We must direct your attention to one point upon which you lay some emphasis, and upon which no British government can compromise, namely, the claim that we should acknowledge the right of Ireland to secede from her allegiance to the King. No such right can ever be acknowledged by us." Dev replied, stating that all he asked for was, quote, "the broad guiding principles of government by the consent of the governed." This bit of boring political prose around the freedom of people to govern themselves is actually kind of the closest Dev ever gets to really arguing for a republic in his letters with Lloyd George. Now, Lloyd George compared arguing with Dev as, quote, "to chasing a man on a merry-go-round while seated on the horse behind him," which I love. And look, you can kind of see why once you start reading Dev's letters. Part of the reason Lloyd George found Dev so difficult was because what Dev actually wanted was kind of unclear to anyone. A lot of historians question whether Dev was ever a Republican or not, but I'm going to try and spend a little bit of time here piecing together what Dev thought would be an adequate solution, because I believe understanding this is vital to trying to figure out what happened next. Speaking to the Dáil, he explained, 2.5 years ago, the old Dáil was elected as an expression of the will of the Irish nation. The answer that the Irish people gave was unmistakable. I do not say that the answer was for a form of government so much, because we are not Republican doctrinaires, but it was for Irish freedom and Irish independence. So if Dev wasn't aiming for a republic, well then, what did he want? As he was writing to Lloyd George, he was also trying to explain exactly this to his Irish colleagues in the Dáil. He dubbed his idea external association. And even as far back as May 1921, he laid it out to Erskine Childress and a few others. He, quote, used a compass to finish a very neat drawing he had already begun. There were five separate and independent circles, all contained within a very large circle. Dev completed the design by drawing another circle outside the large circle, but contacting it. There you have it, said Dev. The large circle is the British Commonwealth, having within it five circles which are members of the Commonwealth. Outside the large circle, but having external contact with it, is Ireland. Apparently Collins walked in as Dev was creating this collection of circles, and Dev, quote, explained the design to him, though Collins, who seemed to be thinking of something else, said nothing at all. If only figuring out the whole thing was as easy as drawing a few circles. Is it as clear as mud to you? Because it seems like it was as clear as mud to everyone else at the time as well. But what is amazing is that Dev had this strange external association idea in his head well before he sat down with Lloyd George. I imagine knowing that Dev wasn't aiming anywhere near a republic and had already compromised so much before setting foot in 10 Downing Street would have driven Lloyd George up the wall. What it actually translates to is kind of unclear. The gist is that Ireland would remain independent, but still linked to the Commonwealth. As Dev explained, it, quote, would commit us to nothing more than consultation with the representation of Great Britain, Canada, Australia, South Africa, New Zealand, etc., on matters of common concern. Some people have described this idea as a novel and imaginative way of reconciling Ireland and Britain's point of view. But as historian Charles Townsend puts it, it struck most hardline Republicans as at best baffling and at worst a betrayal. While for the British, the very fact that Dev explained it as a treaty similar to that signed by any other country, say France or Germany, meant it would never fly. They wanted their, quote, recognition of the supremacy of the crown. So in the end, Dev was never really able to get the Irish on board with external association, and it was never really pushed with the British. By this point, a month and a half had gone by since the two men had met, and Lloyd George was losing his patience. Dev was purposely drawing out the whole correspondence, saying, quote, if negotiations were to collapse, that they should be prolonged into late autumn, if possible, so that if hostilities did recommence, the advantage of the long winter evenings would favour guerrilla tactics. It just goes to show how very clever Dev could be, and how worried he was about whether or not an agreement could actually be reached. But in early September, Lloyd George wrote to Dev, saying that things had gone on long enough, and that he wanted a committed reply to confirm as to whether you were prepared to enter a conference to ascertain how the association of Ireland with the community of nations known as the British Empire can best be reconciled with Irish national aspirations. If, as we hope, your answer is in the affirmative, I suggest that the conference should meet at Inverness on the 20th. Dev said he was happy to do so, but only if the Irish would be negotiating as representatives of an independent and sovereign state. This was a lovely bit of doublethink that kind of hurts your head. Basically, Dev was saying,
Yeah.
We'll discuss our disagreements around the idea of an independent Ireland, but only if we can do so as representatives of an independent Ireland. It's like if you were arguing over what to have for dinner and your partner said, we can continue this argument and I'll listen to your options, but only if we do it at a pizza joint while eating pizza. If you're being accepted as representatives of an independent Ireland, then there's nothing to negotiate. Lloyd George was not happy and called off the Inverness talks, writing, we cannot consent to any abandonment, however informal, of the principles of allegiance to the king, upon which the whole fabric of the empire and every constitution within it are based. It is fatal to that principle that your delegates in the conference should be there as the representatives of an independent and sovereign state. While you insist on claiming that, conference between us is impossible. Hilariously, Dev then basically gaslit him. He started his reply with kind of the 1920s equivalent of, as per my previous email, saying, I have only to say that we have already accepted your invitation in the exact words which you quote from your letter of the 7th instant. He then continues, we have not asked you to abandon any principle, even informally, but surely you must understand that we can only recognize ourselves for what we are. If this self-recognition be made a reason for the cancellation of the conference, we greet it, but it seems inconsistent. Basically, Dev is saying, oh, I never said you had to accept us as representatives of an independent Ireland, just that we will. To stretch my analogy to breaking point, it's kind of like saying, oh, you want Indian for dinner? Of course, we can have Indian, but only if I spend the whole time calling the naan pizza. Lloyd George basically replied with an, okay, sure, if that works for you, go for it. And finally, a date was set for proper negotiations. Irish and British delegates would meet in London in October. Now, there are different ways to view all of this. On the one hand, it could have just been Dev being as difficult and pernickety as he kind of always has been. But on the other hand, as political historian D.H. Aitkenson says, the British Prime Minister soon gave up any discussions of the 6 British limitations and had to settle for the subject of the Association of Ireland and the Commonwealth. Dev had kind of geniusly basically positioned Dominion status as the least Ireland would accept, and any mentions of limitations were dropped, so that he was basically then started arguing over whether they were an independent state or not. That's a huge leap forward. So yeah, definitely a win. However, Lord George was a smart cookie, and even if maybe he had lost out in this round, he had gained an important symbolic victory. Any mention of a republic had very quickly been shut down. As I said, the closest Dev got to really fighting for one was the mention of being able to secede from the Commonwealth, which Lloyd George rejected and Dev never mentioned again. Dev was also basically admitting that total freedom for Ireland was not on the table. That's an important point to make. D.H. Aitkenson nicely explains it by saying, quote, it was taken for granted on both sides that Ireland would, in some as yet undefined way, remain a part of the Commonwealth. And the one point on which Lloyd George was unequivocal was that membership in or association with the Commonwealth implied an allegiance to the British Crown. Stage was well and truly set for serious negotiations to finally take place. Both sides were ready to sit down in October to discuss a means to bring an end to the conflict and create an Ireland the Irish people would be proud of. It was a momentous occasion. the closest Ireland had come to freedom in 800 years. All that was left to figure out was who would be in the room to nut out the thorny details of what that freedom would look like. And that question of who would be in the room leads us to one of the most controversial decisions of the whole period. A decision that arguably would shape and alter the entire country of Ireland right up to the current day. We're going to leave that for the next episode, when we introduce the plenipotentiaries and ask the question of why Ireland left her best man on the side of the pitch. Now, quickly before I go, again, I want to apologise for the delay in this episode. One of the reasons I've been slower to get it out is due to the fact that my band, Four in the Morning, have just released a new record. Pure History Buffs can switch off now. Yeah, he's talking about his music. Boring. But we've been played on Today FM, Spin Southwest, and we're getting odd little write-ups in things like Hot Press, RTE.ie, and Broadsheet. And it's all kind of quite time-consuming. Anyway, I only mention it because the first song on the EP was very much inspired by creating this podcast and reading emails from ye, the listeners. And I'd love to share it with you all. One of the reasons I started this show was because I was living on the other side of the world. I wanted to feel a little closer to home. Writing and researching this podcast and chatting to all of you has really done that. And I just want to say thanks. So this song is kind of about all of that. About history, home, and feeling very, very far away. You might enjoy it, but if not, simply switch off and return in 2 weeks for some proper history. But hopefully you get a kick out of it. And if nothing else, it might be the only song you'll ever hear that calls out Arthur Griffith in the first line. Enjoy.
I don't know any rebel songs. I don't know how to say hello. I wanna go home. I'm living far from any green fields. My friends are dying overseas. They're listening to green gloves. They're falling in with new loves. They're gonna war without me. And I'm hiding in a mansion, watching all the mother's men get killed. I was laughing in my last letter, but I don't feel any better, girl. I wanna go home. Go home. sounds of war. You whispered things like low dawn. I wanna go home.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and if you're enjoying it, give us a review on Apple Podcasts or tell your friends. It really helps. You can also support the show, buy merch, and get in touch all through our website, thehistoryofireland.com. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. It's always great hearing from you guys. And if I've made a mistake, please do let me know. The History of Ireland was written and produced by me, Kevin Dolan. Additional research and fact-checking by Robert Babington, music by Liam Doyle, and additional help from assistant producer Aoife Murphy. This podcast was recorded in the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.